Treacle and Fred. The plate layers arrived at their cabin to start the day, two on foot, one on an ancient bicycle with an oil lamp on the front. He only rode it to work. Going home, there was no room for him on the machine at all. It was taken up by old fence rails, gate posts, tree branches, split sleepers, anything combustible to keep his hearth and home warm without payment. He never failed to find what he called me bitter wood. He was known as Oud Woody. Jobber and the ganger walked together holding their pigeon baskets. They were wicker baskets with a hinged lid fastened with a long wooden peg through two hoops, containing their lunch wrapped in newspaper and a small thick green glass bottle with the word lung tonic down the side, filled with milk. They all went through the morning ritual saying, "Hey up," to all, and being "hey upped" in return. The plate layer's cabin was built with old sleepers stood on end and let into the ground for the walls. The roof was made of large slates. The gaps and bolt holes in the sleepers were stuffed with rags and tarred tarpaulin strings, rather like caulking a ship's timbers. The brick floor was shattered to pieces with years of stick chopping on rainy days. The door had a large hole at waist level covered from inside with a cracked glass door from an old clock. It was a peephole, so the seated plate layers could look out down the path for unwelcome official visitors. Inside, an open brick fireplace and chimney lined one wall, the original fire bars long burnt away and replaced with fish plates. A double row of sleepers propped up on bricks lay along each wall, providing the seating arrangements. Old seed sacks scrounged from farm buildings were folded and put on the rough seats to give only small comfort to the corduroy-trousered bottoms. A wide length of wood, nailed to the whitewashed wall above the seats, was polished by years of restless backs rubbing along it. Each man had his own position on the sleeper seat and kept to it, like a cow that always goes to the same stall in the milking shed. Above, on two beams, lay four scythes with rusting blades, long wooden rails, posts, jack handles, stiff bristle brushes, spare bundles of bean sticks. On the walls hung axes, slashers, bill hooks, augers, a cross-cut saw, an adze, dollies, bolt breakers, spanners, like weapons in a medieval castle. At one end were shovels, picks, crowbars, barbed wire, riddles, jacks, a stock of new wooden rail keys, a two-man drilling machine, an oil can and two buckets, and a bundle of rolled-up green, red and yellow flags, plus a large bag of salt. On the window sill of a very small window lay four mildewed rule books engraved with the words "For Company's Servants" on the sun-faded cover. They were never opened, and only the spiders seemed interested, determined to bind them shut forever. A pile of sticks chopped from old sleepers the previous day lay under the seat, ready to light the fire that soon blazed away under a four-pint cast-iron kettle resting on two fish plates over the flames. The plate layers left their wicker baskets in the cabin. Cloth bags were never used. The mice would be gnawing at the food as soon as their backs were turned, and went off to scrape and oil the points in the shunting yard, knowing quite well that the kettle wouldn't be boiling for some time. The fourth member of the gang, the walking man, lived at the other end of the length. He started there every morning to walk the permanent way, clutching his bag of office, a special long-handled hammer with which he knocked all the wooden keys back into place where they'd fallen out from the rails the night before. He was a bachelor and lived in a railway cottage with his best friend, Fred, a nondescript dog with the legs of a greyhound and the body of a rough-haired terrier. He was a happy man, not too good with a printed word, but expert at all the wildlife on railway banks and woods. His loves were food, beer, tobacco, and Fred. His stomach was enormous and hung like an avalanche ready to fall. His trousers were held tightly in by a broad leather band from some discarded horse harness. All the local people knew him as Treacle Belly, and he was quite proud of the name. The railway ran through the centre of a large sporting estate owned by Sir Joshua Crabtree Buff, who had allowed the railway to be built there because he was short of cash at the time, and they always offered him free first-class travel. The railway banks and woods were full of wildlife, partridge, pheasant, rabbits. Treacle and Fred did their best to keep the numbers down with snare, ferret and catapult. Treacle couldn't abide them noisy guns and looked down on people striding over fields shooting for killing's sake. He was a deadly shot with his catapult, made with thick square elastic purchased from the local ironmonger. All the villagers worked on the estate and lived in tied cottages. They did not dare to poach for game for fear of losing jobs and home. Treacle was a king amongst them. He could stroll through the estates on the railway, a big canvas bag on his shoulder containing a few wooden keys. It was like a diplomatic bag and could transport fur and feather away in legitimate pursuit of his work, much to the disgust of the gamekeeper. Treacle had a good barter system going. What game he and Fred couldn't eat, he exchanged for beer, tobacco, sausages, home-cured bacon, pork pies, and second-hand clothes. He did not rate money very highly, which was just as well, because the villagers didn't have any to spare anyway. A week before Christmas, Treacle always got official orders to go rabbiting. That meant getting at least 25 rabbits from the railway banks to send to the permanent way head office staff, who in turn gave them to friends and relatives in town as Christmas presents, without costing them a penny. Treacle always sent his own permanent way inspector, Mr. Percival Smallwood, known as Old Sawdust, a large cardboard box with his name on it, securely tied with binder twine. Inside, wrapped in paper and straw, lay two large rabbits with their fur jackets off, cleaned and ready for the pot, and nestling alongside, two plump pheasants with their feathers off, drawn and ready for the pot too. A similar box went to the station master, Mr. Samuel Barker, known as Owd Doggy. The poached birds were never mentioned, and a discreet silence was kept between all parties. In fact, Doggy Barker never spoke to Treacle at all. But letters of complaint from Sir Crabtree Buff about diminishing game in the woods alongside the railway were quite often accidentally dropped into the fire. A demand from Old Crabby that all game killed by moving trains should be returned to the estate office brought smiles to the staff of the permanent way. Treacle used to lay a trail of corn and raisins down the bank in chosen positions, where he could lie in waiting, then zonk them with a well-placed stone from his catapult, all in near silence, and without having to set foot in Owd Crabby's estate. Treacle and Fred arrived at the cabin just as the tea was being brewed, using a black half-gallon chipped teapot that had started out in life in some unknown railway refreshment room. Four large battered pot mugs with the company's initials down the side and from the same source stood waiting. They opened their baskets. Breakfast had begun. Opening a wooden box, Treacle took out a large frying pan and with a knife scraped a generous portion of dripping into it from a tin marked Bourneville Cocoa. Next, four sausages, two thick slices of fat home-cured bacon, two eggs, and soon he had them sizzling on the fire. Two thick slices of bread, washed down with a pint of black tea, would keep him going until lunchtime. Fred, lying on his bag under the seat, was tired after a long walk. The last mile he spent on top of the rails itself. The rough ballast made his feet sore, but he soon found a smoother path on top of the rail. His master, having eaten his own breakfast, started to get Fred's from a tin in his bag. He took four partridge eggs, acquired on the morning walk, broke them into the pan, and with some leftover crusts, gave Fred his first meal of the day. The frying pan was licked clean, then put away in the box, all ready for the next time. Treacle put his hand into his diplomatic bag and groped around. "I've got an hat," he said, bringing out a curly-brimmed bowler hat with bits of rabbit fur sticking to it. They all solemnly tried it on in turn, but it was too small.
"Happen it's old Crabtree's," said Jobber.
"Nah, I wouldna get his great yed in it," said Treacle.
And he should know, having found two of Sir Joshua Crabtree Buff's hats in the past. The first he handed in to the station clerk and waited expectantly for the customary silver threepenny piece reward. Sixpence, if you were lucky. But no, nothing. He knew Oud Crabby had claimed it. News had filtered through the grapevine. Treacle never returned any of his headgear again. Whilst travelling on the local trains, Sir Joshua Crabtree Buff and the tenant farmers had a habit of standing by an open window, gazing out over the estate, looking at the state of the crops, the game, the sheep, cattle, and workers who had stopped to light a pipe or who were sitting under a tree. They had a grandstand view going up the embankment, but it cost them dearly in the loss of headgear. Once, Sir Joshua, leaning out to get a better view of a plough team that had stopped for some reason, lost a nearly new deerstalker. When he got back to the station, he demanded that it should be searched for immediately, but it had not turned up 24 hours later. It was brought up during conversation in the platelayer's cabin.
"Ed Crabby's lost another hat," said Jobber.
Treacle made no comment. He knew well where it was, hanging on a nail behind his pantry door. He was going to wear it himself on cold nights. The rear peak had been cut off with a razor-sharp shut knife, because he thought it looked daft. Sir Joshua became quite persistent about his hat. Every time he met the station master, he insisted that it should be searched for with greater diligence. Station Master Barker passed the message to the clerk, who passed it to the senior porter, who passed it on to Jimmy the lad. 2 days later, he went to the door of the platelayer's cabin. They were playing dominoes on an extended lunchtime.
It looked like rain, so they were hanging on a bit.
A large board rested across their knees from one seat to the other, its surface shining and glazed like a mirror from actions of the ivory dominoes. They clicked and clacked at every touch. The men studied the dominoes in silence, with as much concentration as an international chess match. The winning domino was crashed down on the board by the jubilant player. Then the inquest began.
You should have played your three. I couldn't play it, or had to get me sevens out. I couldn't do nout, or had four doubles. You blocked me.
I didn't.
You did.
Whose drop is it? They argued as though the stake was a sovereign instead of a penny up and down the board. The lad waited by the door. He knew better than to speak during the play.
"Hey up, Jimmy," they said.
"Hey up," he said in return. "Our doggy sent a message. You've got to search for Old Crabby's hat with the..."
He paused. Lines appeared on his forehead. He looked up at the rafters of the cabin as if for inspiration.
With great giddiness.
They looked at him in silence. Then Jobber said, "Eh?" Treacle said, "What?" Ed Woody scratched his head. The ganger said,
"Gillydance."
"Ah," said the lad.
"Perhaps they're sending out a dog what sniffs out hats," said Treacle, smiling.
Then a chuckle developed into a bellowing laugh that made his great belly wobble until it looked like a volcano about to erupt. Even Fred opened an eye and looked at his master, fearing he was going to have a seizure. They were all laughing now, so loud it even got the signalman off the locker and to the window. The joke soon got round about the at-sniffing dog. The deerstalker was never found, and only Treacle knew the reason why. The permanent way inspector, Percival Smallwood, known as Oud Sawdust, walked the length once a month, his progress going before him via the signal box telephone, the signalman making a special effort to get the message to the plate layers. One cold day, a young relief permanent way inspector, standing in for Percival Smallwood, he was off with a bad chest, approached the plate layer's cabin at lunchtime. That was a mistake for a start.
"Hey up," said Treacle, looking through the clock door spy hole. "Somebody's coming."
The ganger hastily pulled out his large Waltham pocket watch.
"Oh, Don," he said. "Take no notice. We've got 10 minutes yet."
They had knocked off for an early lunch an hour ago, with the door tightly shut and a great roaring fire. The inspector pulled the door open and stepped inside.
"I'm the relief inspector," he said. "I've noticed a very poor..."
He took a breath, started to cough, then choked. His face went red. He clutched his throat, his eyes protruded and started to water. Whistling noises were heard in his chest. His knees sagged. He managed to push himself out from the doorway into the open air and stood gasping.
"'Struth," he said. "It smells a bit strong in there."
The plate layers ignored him.
"It's like something's gone off dead. Can't you smell it?"
They all knew quite well what had died. It was Treacle's feet. They smelled like a dead camel that had been left out in the Gobi Desert for a month. They were not going to admit that to a young upstart of an inspector. Treacle broke the silence and with a solemn face said,
"It must be the drains." "There aren't any drains," said the inspector sharply. "Is it that dog?" "No, it ain't. My Fred had a good wash in the rain the other day," said Treacle.
The inspector sensed he was up against the united front and dropped the subject. He kept back from the door and went on to list all the faults he had found on the permanent way, and eventually left. They watched him in silence until he was out of sight.
"Your feet were a bit strong," the ganger said.
"Ah, I know," said Treacle. "But I canna help it. Me old dad's feet were the same. It's hereditary."
He blamed everything on his late father with a sort of cheerful helplessness. His feet, his great belly, drinking, eating, poaching, all were passed off with, "It's me old dad's fault, it's hereditary." Even the dog's name was inherited. All the family dogs were called Fred. They all left the cabin, Treacle and Jobber carrying an axe and a slasher, and went to the grindstone under a lilac tree that some forgotten plate layer had stuck in years ago by the door. The wheel was fastened across two upright sleepers let in the ground. With hard usage, it had worn to an oval shape and seemed to go up and down rather than round. The square in the centre had worn round, so the spindle had to be packed with wooden wedges. Treacle pressed the axe onto the wheel and Jobber turned the handle. All went well for a while. With his pipe drawing well and lost in a world of his own, Jobber was quite oblivious to the fact that the wheel was stationary and the spindle was going round and round. He was brought back to earth with the shouts of,
"Adger, adger, knock them wedges in," from Treacle.
It was a long job sharpening the hedge-cutting tools, and always ended with a plaintive cry,
"We shall have to ask old Sawdust for a new stone."
Treacle took the tools back to the cabin to prepare for the walk back along the track towards home, and to see if
them meese had eaten Fred.
His only criticism of his dog was that he tolerated mice. Fred would let them play all around him in the cabin with complete indifference.
"He'd let them meese take the food out of his mouth," said Treacle.
Fred ignored the mice. After running himself silly after rabbits and pheasants, he felt it was beneath his dignity to chase after them as they skipped all around him as he lay on his bag. Treacle opened the cabin door. Fred woke up, wagged his tail, and stretched, and soon they were off, Treacle with his diplomatic bag over one shoulder, keying hammer on the other, and Fred daintily walking on top of the rails, and leaving the mice to play around the dying embers of the cabin fire.